ready for one dry kiss.
Oh, yeah.
This podcast may have explicit language that may not be appropriate for all listeners. We do curse in this one. We do talk about sex. If that is not your cup of tea, it is our cup of tea. So please be advised and maybe skip this one or all of them altogether. We're not sure. But hopefully you give it a listen if you don't have sensitive ears.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies. Each episode, we recap a scintillating Hallmark movie. Today, it's a little something different.
We are doing our second part of Mixed Up in the Mediterranean. And last time, on our first part of Mixed Up in the Mediterranean, I'm just kidding, we're not doing that. Because if you want to find out what happened in the first part of Mixed Up in the Mediterranean, just please go back and listen to it yourself. We don't need to recap you.
You can figure it out. Listen to the first episode and then come back here for part two.
Part two. Since we are not doing our normally scheduled podcast, we have a little bit of extra time. We thought we'd do a little synopsis on us and some fun facts about Corinne and Tamara.
First, let me introduce my lovely co-host, the stunningly beautiful Tamara Cosio.
And I need to take a moment to introduce my lovely co-host that has the best hair in the whole world that I am super jealous of, Corinne Edding.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's so sparkly. It's like tinsel on your head.
Da-da! I'm like a fucking Hallmark Christmas tree. Oh, yeah. We launched our podcast a couple weeks ago, and I'm very happy that people have listened to more than one episode, and it's been more than one person. So, yay! Thank you.
All right. That's a win. That's a win.
I know. We have 5 fans, Tam, and I am here for the fan glory. Just make sure to share our podcast, tweet us, Insta us, like us, whatever.
Although we've been doing this for a few months, this podcast was very, very much in the works for over a year. It had lots of iterations. It was something completely different. We tried a lot of things, and finally we decided on this, and we are both very happy with it.
Oh, for sure. We decided to do a podcast together several years ago. We developed a full idea. We recorded an episode. Ultimately, we decided that we wanted to do something a little more fun, a little more light, a little less artistical, if you will. And what's lighter and less artistical than Hallmark movies? I ask you that.
Not much. So that's our personal synopses. Corinne, did you have any fun facts that you'd like to share with the people that you think they should know about one half of this lovely duo?
I watched over 100 Hallmark movies between November and December during the holiday season.
Good Lord.
I know, right? Are you impressed? Yeah, you're so impressed.
That's why Corinne gets to choose the movies, because she has a huge arsenal to pull from.
For the most part, yeah, I do suggest the movies. But if Tam wants to go and watch a ton of Hallmark movies and figure out which one she wants to do, I am also completely down for that.
Oh, no. I'm doing my Hallmark watching in moderation. So they're still special and still have a lovely little corner of my heart all their own.
Yeah, I don't think that you have the capacity for Hallmark movies that I do.
I would say that's true. Yep.
In preparation for this podcast, I joined a bunch of Hallmark Facebook groups to see what they were talking about. And for the most part, a lot of Hallmark listeners would not be interested in our podcast because we cuss and talk about sexy things and whatnot. But a movie that we're going to be doing for Swoon in June is It Was Always You. In the forum on Facebook, a person was like, I am so worried about Tyler Hines. He looks really pale in this movie. And one of the things I noticed right off the bat during this movie is that Tyler Hines is tanned for Jesus. I was like, oh no, honey, he has a lot of tan going on in this one, so I'm not worried about him being pale.
Maybe he just did the tan stage 3 instead of the tan stage 5, and she noticed the difference. He cranked it down a couple of notches. I want a golden brown, not a bronze red.
He didn't want to go full Trump.
Nope.
Huh. No Oompa Loompa orange for him. That's what an odd choice.
I mean, trying something new. Trying something new. Being a little bit more lifelike in his coloring. Although I don't think he's Trump orange. I shouldn't
say
that.
No, absolutely not. That's why you said he was several shades down from that. This podcast for me was inspired by a few different podcasts. My Favorite Murder being one of them. Let's Go to Court being another.
Love Let's Go to Court.
Love Let's Go to Court. And then True Crime Obsessed and Obsessed with Disappeared are the other ones that I feel like were kind of influences on our totally non-crime based podcast.
Yes, we said the last thing the world needs right now is another true crime podcast. So we decided to take it in a different direction.
For a lot of the Hallmark movie podcasts, what they do is they do a quick outline of what the movie is and then they talk about their commentary. And for us, like they do in all of the podcasts that I referenced, they tell a story throughout. And I really like that, the whole narrative thing. And so that's why I was interested in doing like a full recap of the movie.
Which we do. Every week with you, dear listeners.
Yes. Forever and ever, amen.
Have you said everything you want, Corinne?
Yeah. What are your fun facts about yourself?
I'm going to go into some fun facts to keep in the spirit of our podcast and how we normally do the top. I thought of three.
Ooh.
Quote unquote fun facts.
I like it.
The first is that I decided to go to school at the ripe old age of 37,
woo-hoo!
Which was very hard and one of the hardest things I ever had to do because I put myself through school and I did it while I was working full time. So I think the longest stretch of time I went without a day off was 27 days and I damn nearly killed myself and a few other people that got in my way. But
they should have known better.
Yeah. I mean, it was the best decision I ever made, but oddly enough, I went to school to be a graphic designer. I had no computer skills. I'm talking like zero. So I felt like I had to go to an institution to get the know-how that I needed and wanted. And initially, when I was back in my heyday around 18 and 19, when I was in college the first go-round, I should say, I was interested in being a graphic designer, but it was the early 90s and I wanted to be like an old-school graphic designer, not like the newfangled ones that use computers. So my 19-year-old brain said, I'm just going to wait till all this like computer fads go away.
Oh.
And when the computers go away, then I'll try to go back into graphic design.
How'd that work out for you?
Yeah, no, it didn't happen.
Oh.
It took me a couple of decades to work up the courage to actually go into it and adapt with the times.
Nice. And now you are a computer wizard and you do awesome things and make beautiful art on your computer. So I love it.
Yes. And all the people out there that might be of a certain age that don't think that they can learn computers or know computers, it's really not that hard. It's just about jumping into the deep end and flailing madly and then eventually you'll get it. Second fun fact, in this movie, it's mixed up in the Mediterranean, and it's about twin brothers that I do have a sister, and we are quote-unquote Irish twins.
Aww.
We are a year and 2 days apart. Grew up very, very close.
And it's so funny because I always thought that you two were a couple years apart, and I had no idea until well into adulthood, maybe 10 years ago, that you were actually a year and 2 days apart.
I thought you were my friend. How could you not know this? Girls, y'all, son, about inevitable betrayal. I tell everybody that we are a year and 2 days apart, and my mom's still mad at me. Or at least she was when she was alive, because apparently she went in to get her tubes tied, and whoopsie, she was pregnant with me. We are also both Geminis, and we could not be more different. The astrological sign is supposed to be like you almost have dual personalities. Mm-hmm. So part of me is like, do I have dual personalities, or is my dual personality my beautiful sis that I grew up with?
I think it's great that you two are so close together in age, and you have a twinning sign.
I know, right? It's the stars talking to us. And the third and final fun fact, ooh, that I have is that I was and have been with my boyfriend Dan for 18 years, I think. We lose track often because we're just in it for the ride. So we've actually popped the question a couple of times. We've gotten engaged twice.
Oh.
But every time we set a date, something bad happened. So I said, nah, let's wait till, you know, things smooth over, and I've just been too chicken shit to set a date again. First time set a date, lost my job. Second time set a date, my dad passed, ooh, away. I'm not tempting fate. We could just be like Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell and just live together for the rest of our lives.
Those two are great couple model. I would totally go for, mm-hmm, that. Yeah.
Those are my three, count them, three fun facts.
Was there anything you else you want to include in this
second set of Mix Up in the Mediterranean podcasts?
Mm-hmm.
Nope, but thank you for indulging us in listening to our bits about the podcast that we've released up until this point and our fun facts. We really hope that you enjoy the second portion of our Mix Up in the Mediterranean episode.
And away we go. So we reach the start of the competition.
Yeah.
Heikem Mueller is there and she is hosting the hell out of it. Everybody's at their kitchen stations and the camera moves up so that you can see above, and there is Heike in the center. It zooms down onto her face, and she says, "Welcome to the 87th Annual Escoffier Competition." She explains that there's a big prize of 250,000 euros, which is about 297,000 US dollars, and that everybody has 2 hours to make a classic seafood bouillabaisse. While she is talking, and during this entire cooking segment, there is a gale force wind going on. Everybody's hair is flying around, or it is hairsprayed within an inch of its life, and it's just twitching on their heads, really wanting to move.
I was wondering how much the weather informed the stylistic choices, because sometimes when Meg walks in and her hair is like severely like gelled to the top of her head, I'm like, you would look so much better with it like natural and not so stiff.
Yes, but she has so much hair. If there was wind blowing around like that, she would have been smothered and looking like Cousin It.
100%.
You know?
Hair explained.
I just think they probably had to re-record all the audio because there's no way they could have protected the microphones from that gale force wind that was blowing around.
Oh, for sure.
She says, "Knives up," and everybody starts chopping, and there's a cooking montage. Yay! People are slicing and dicing. And then they do their final touches, and then they're sent back to their rooms.
When they present their food, the judges never eat it. They just look at it and then walk away.
During the first round, they just kind of cruise on by the food. I'm guessing that they eat it quietly at another point in time, but I totally agree with you. I was like, they aren't going to like bring the food up to the judges? That's just kind of
all
weird.
That montage, like you'd think in a cooking competition they would actually eat the food, because at one point Joshine even says, "That's it," and Henry's like, "Yeah," and I'm like, so they just look at it and based on the look of it, that's
they didn't think a bouillabaisse would taste good either, Tam. So
rightfully so.
They knew your heart and they were right there with you.
No bouillabaisse en este corazón.
Joshian and Henry head back up to the hotel room, where they will then go down later that night for a reception and get the results. Josh and Henry enter the room. Chester is thrilled. All hail the conquering hero. This is the response that we are expecting. They nailed it. Julian, of course, responds in kind, enthusiastically, supportive. Thank you, Josh, for going out there and cooking for me. You're nodding your head. Yes, you obviously agree.
I'm in agreement. Yes, because I know what's coming and I'm about to say fuck you to...
What he actually says is, "You were supposed to be dicey."
I thought you said Henry said that. Did you say Julian said that? Oh my God.
No. I said Julian said that.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Henry. Yes, no, fuck you, Julian. After everything he's done.
I know, right? So fucking Julian says, "You were dicing instead of chopping. Your pieces were too small." The horror! And Josh, I think quite correctly, says, "You should be thanking me instead of criticizing me." And Henry is, if looks could kill, Julian would be dead. And Julian says, "You've changed. I don't even know you anymore." Josh is like, "What the fuck, dude? I'm helping you. You've changed. What's your damage, Heather?" Josh staggers from the couch, and Josh is like, what the fuck are you doing? And he says, "I'm getting up so I can leave," and slam the door behind me. And Josh says, "Fucking save your energy. Sit right back down. I'm going to go out and slam the door myself. Bye." Josh rightfully leaves pissed off. Chester's like, what the fuck? This was not the celebration that I was hoping for. I like me a party, and this is not a party. And you know that Julian ain't getting none tonight because Henry, not happy with the whole situation either.
That and his bad back.
Yeah, but there's things that
can be done. I knew you were going to say that. You dirty, fun, dirty girl.
Fun things. Josh is kind of on the outs with the penthouse suite, and he goes down to the semifinal announcement, and Meg approaches Joshian, and he's like, "What? Why are you looking at me funny?" And she says, "Oh, you just need this," and she straightens his tie, and he says, "Man, getting dressed by myself is hard." And she says, "What?" And he says, great evening we're having here, huh? But because he did not have his brother Julian to help him and quality check his dress, or Henry, because Henry would have been on that too. He wears the cutest suspenders. Oh, Henry, love your style. Meg says, where's Henry? Joshian says, upstairs with my brother. She's surprised that he's not down there with him. And he says, well, you know, you were having issues with your dad. He's like, I had a little family issue myself, so I'm just down here on my own. The winners are announced, and who makes it? Etienne! Yay! Some other unremarkable people, and Joshian! Yay! We go to the next morning, and Henry and Joshian are walking through the hotel lobby, and Meg is approaching them and says, you're up early. Joshian says, well, somebody thought it was more important that I get dressed and look right than get sleep.
That's what camp you're in, right, Corinne? You always like,
let's get up early so we can look great. No, I'm like, let's roll out of bed and stagger out the door. But you will have beautifully blended eyeshadow before you leave the house. So you're good. If style-wise there was a Josh and a Julian, you would be the Julian and I would be the Josh. Personality-wise, I'm probably more the Julian and you're probably more the Josh.
That's true. We encompass both the brothers beautifully.
Twinsies! So Josh resents getting up early to get dressed, and I do not blame him at all. I feel that on a deeply personal level. Meg wants to meet this mysterious brother, Josh, and Henry and Joshian look at each other, and they're like, I'm so sorry. He's not a morning person. You do not want to deal with that. Fortunately, they get saved by the bell because Meg gets a phone call. She excuses herself. Henry looks at Josh, and he is like, seriously, dude. You are getting too close to her. We need to prepare for the Black Diamond Truffle round. You need to get your focus and your head straight. He walks off to bring Julian his coffee, leaving Josh alone. Meg walks towards Joshian, and he sees her and says, you look like you've seen a ghost. She is not happy. She replies, the Black Diamond Truffles aren't going to make it from France. This is a disaster. I'm screwed. Joshian says, well, just get more. And Meg is like, you know how rare they are. And he's like, oh yeah, totally know how rare they are, sure. And then a light bulb goes off over his head. Bing. He says, I think I can help, in the form of a man whose name rhymes with Lester. Why, yes. Let's go meet Chester.
Chester does seem like a man who can get things.
Yes, definitely. Which is one of the reasons why he's the most interesting character in this entire movie. I bet earlier that day he had, like, just stumbled out of bed. Maybe a lady on one side, maybe a man on the other side. He poured himself a nice stiff little drink, hair of the dog, and he got his morning started right. Chester and Meg and Joshian are in the square, and Chester's very excited. He says, if I get these Black Diamond Truffles for you, perhaps this will score me an invite to the Escoffier events from now on. I'm so delighted you thought of me. And Meg says, if you get those Black Diamond Truffles, you can get invited.
That's a special invitation, even more prestigious than invited. Invited.
You know me. I'm so special. You can be invited to all the Escoffier events. You can stay at the hotel. Shit, I'll even give you a blowjob right now.
She does not say that.
let's just make this happen.
Yes, and she does not say that. No. She said you could live at the hotel, which I would promptly take her up on.
It's a nice hotel.
Mm-hmm. Room service to clean your room every day? Hell yeah.
Chester says, look, there's the guy over there on the park bench. I'm going to go talk to my source. You look around the market. If he sees you watching, he'll get spooked. So Meg and Josh head off to the farmer's market. They end up having another intimate conversation about cheeseburgers and dead moms.
As one would.
As one would. We always talk about cheeseburgers and dead moms. First topic on the list every time. Joshian asks Meg, what's your favorite meal besides chocolate? She responds, takeout. Okay, one isn't a meal, the other isn't a type of food. So, losing on both levels, she clarifies, though, and says, food is just food.
She said, food is fuel. And I'm like, what kind of fuel is chocolate? It's like backfire your engine, get a short boost.
It's the cocaine of desserts.
Yes, it is.
He says, there must be something you like. She responds, oh, you're going to make fun of me. This is not going to be a beluga caviar moment. And he says, no. I may judge, but I'll keep it to myself. This is a safe space. Share away. She says, there's nothing better than a really good cheeseburger. I'm going to say, yeah, I do enjoy a really good cheeseburger. And then she goes on to elaborate that the one way she would connect with her dad after her mom died when she was a little kid is he would take her out if she was upset or they had something to celebrate or whatever to cheeseburgers. Joshian says, well, you know, food is another way to say, I love you. Do, 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 do. Cheeseburger. Meg wants to know what Joshian's favorite dish is, and he says baked Alaska because his dead mom used to bake it for special moments. So they also have dead moms in common. She still has one parent, but he's an ass. So, you know.
Don't hold back, Corinne. Tell us how you really feel.
I feel very ambivalent about everything. They've had this moment where they've both shared that they have dead moms and they both eat food. And Chester approaches them with a little burlap sack. He holds it over his head in triumph. He has the black truffles. Yay! Everybody is thrilled. Kermit Muppet arms waving wildly for everyone. So we move on to the next scene where we get the rare Juliosh sighting. Dun, dun, dun. Julian is tired of hanging around the hotel by himself and he is like, I'm going to put on my Josh outfit and go out there into the world because this sucks. I've crushed the candy. I've worded with friends and I am done with this. I need to go out on the town. He changes into his Josh costume and sneaks out while Henry is out in the village and Joshian and Meg are at the farmer's market. He staggers down the street and his back is still jacked up. He does an incredible job of acting like he has a back problem. It looks like me when I have a back problem. So he hobbles into town. Who does he run into? But his friend, Etienne. Juliosh sees Etienne. Etienne sees who he thinks is Josh. And he says, oh, you must be Josh. Juliosh says, Etienne! And he says, how do you know my name? And he's like, oh, well, you know, the TVs. I seen you on the Escoffier competition. Juliosh says, how did you know it was me? Etienne says, there is no way Julian would be caught dead in that cap because Juliosh is wearing Josh's lucky cap. I am surprised that Josh allows it, but whatever.
And they're identical twins.
And Juliosh says, how do you know that Julian wouldn't wear this attire, particularly that cap? And Etienne says, me and Julian, we are very close. He once told me you have nothing in common. Juliosh says, well, we do have things in common. We both cook. He says, you work in a diner in Alaska. Psh. Well, Juliosh is not pleased with the way that Etienne is talking about his brother and slash about himself, Julian. He says, Julian is very supportive of me. Does he think I could be doing more with my talent? Sure. Experiencing the culinary arts outside of Alaska? Absolutely. And then Etienne pulls a mirror out of his pocket, holds it up to Juliash's face and says, "So, he supports you, but you want to change everything to be more like him." And suddenly, Juliash looks up at the sky. He has an out-of-body experience. Oh, he has a moment where he's in an empty room with a mirror in front of himself. And he starts singing, "I'm looking at the man in the mirror." As he suddenly realizes how he has been to Josh all of these years. He now knows that he has done Josh wrong. Why? Why? All it took was him fucking up his back and dressing up as Josh and hanging out with the horrible Etienne to finally have that moment. Then he comes back to his cocky self and he says, "You haven't talked to Julian about this." Etienne says, "No, he's been avoiding me." Juliash says, "Smart man." And they go their separate ways.
A life lesson from the most unexpected place.
I know, right? Did you expect that Etienne would be serving up some actual, like, non-shade useful knowledge?
Well, he was, but, you know, the shade in the right hands caused a revelation.
I mean, it was an asshole thing to say, but it was also insightful versus just being
there
an
was
asshole
a little
thing
snark
to
behind
say.
It. There is, like,
oh, for sure.
Insightful snark, though. Insightful snark. A little later, Ryan and Josh are talking and walking on the water, and...
Who's Ryan? Oh, you did it again, Henry!
Shit, what? I put down Ryan in my notes! I renamed Henry. His new persona is Ryan. His twin brother just hasn't been introduced yet. He's coming up in the next scene, apparently. Oh, my God. I literally wrote Ryan. I apologize.
It happened again.
I never changed my notes. For the last time I kept calling him Ryan, I never changed my notes. Cut to our last recording where I constantly called Henry Ryan and Corinne kept correcting me, and I never changed the name in my notes. Some Cracker Jack retelling of stories with the wrong names. You're welcome. Henry and Josh are talking and walking on the river. Henry says, "Practice went well." And Josh says, "You wouldn't know it by talking to Julian. He's like this." And he pulls his fist into a tight ball, symbolically for Julian's tight ass. And Ryan says, "I know." Damn it!
Ryan?
Henry!
Oh my God, stop reading your notes. It's got the wrong name.
It's only in this section that I hopefully didn't change it.
Henry says, "I know that ass of his is really tight. I like it a lot. It's one of the reasons why we're still together."
I know. Henry says knowingly, "That is a tight, tight ass." But he's just trying to compete at this level and save his restaurant and impress you. "Impress me?" Josh said. "If he's trying so hard to impress me, why doesn't he trust me more?" And Henry said he's scared of losing control because he's a control freak. And Josh said he yelled at me for grounding peppercorns wrong. He'll never give me control of anything. And Henry says, "Maybe you need to control your feelings towards Meg." Good deflection, Henry. You can never, ever have anything with her, even after the competition. If she knows what we're doing, she'll take away the title if we get it, or we'll get disqualified if she knows before the competition's over. It's over with you and Meg. You must leave her alone. Later, Meg is doing a final check of the outdoor kitchen stadium. Joshian comes to look at the station, which at night looks like a kind of off-brand blue 80s discotheca. They lock eyes, and Joshian says, "Are you hungry?" Back at the hotel room, Julian and Henry. I said his name right, and I wrote it right in my notes now, finally.
Yay! My hero.
They're having a heated conversation. Julian is livid and says, "I need to cook." And Henry's like, "Just trust Josh. You don't have a wristband, and your brother's been doing fine. Leave it alone." Josh says, "I do trust my brother." And Henry's like, "Do you? Because he doesn't think you do." And Julian says, "What?" Because really, seriously, Julian, like, if that's a revelation to you, you need all kinds of mirrors all around you.
He needs to be singing, "I'm looking at the man in the mirrors."
All kinds of mans and all kinds of mirrors. Joshian and Meg are back at the workstation kneading dough to make hamburger buns, because that's what you do when you want a hamburger. You bake the bread yourself. Meg's like, wait a second, I thought you were going to cook for me. And Joshian says, if you teach a man to fish, he'll fish for a day. Or no, wait, if you know that saying, the fishing saying that people say.
He'll eat for a day, and if you teach a man to fish, he'll
eat for life.
Blah, blah, blah. Shut up with that.
Don't discount my phrase that I didn't know. Don't discount.
It wasn't you. It wasn't personal. I was talking to Joshian.
They're kneading dough, getting dirty. And Joshian says, we don't normally wear blazers when we do this. If we get dirty, I'll pay for the dry cleaning bill. And things are getting a little too close, so Meg rightfully switches gears.
Well, yeah, because when they're kneading dough, it's not like they're standing next to each other kneading dough. She is, like, kneading dough, and he is standing behind her with his arms around her, kneading the dough all, like, ghost pottery wheel style.
Yes.
So, yeah, I was just getting a little mixed messages at this point, for sure.
She asks about Julian and Henry's wedding and how was the ceremony? What was it like? And most importantly, was your brother Josh there? Was he your best man? Let's talk about Josh some more. He was. Yes, yes, and yes. A little later on, they're on the floor eating burgers. How long do those burgers take? I guesstimate 2.5 to 3 hours. Meg is so impressed with their jointly made burgers, she says that she should take her skills to the restaurant world, coordinating special events and creating unique themes. And Joshian says, yeah, you should do that for Jay Northrup. And she practically squeals. You mean that? Really? You think we should work together? Joshian backpedals so fast. It's something we should think about first, and I definitely have to ask Henry. He's the business guy, and by the way, we're in the middle of this competition. We should probably be focusing on that. So, I have a question for you about Meg after watching this scene, and she's coming on pretty strong in a couple of ways that are surprising. So, Corinne,
how is she coming on strong? I didn't even notice that.
When she, like, practically jumped in his lap about the business proposal that he kind of sort of hinted at, and all the times that she brings up his brother. You look like you disagree with me.
If I were talking with somebody, gay, straight, whatever, I don't care, and they seem to have a complimentary business to mine, I would be very excited.
Hold on. Before you say any more, I have to give you the choices.
Oh, shit. There's choices. 'Cause I did
a multiple choice.
Oh, I don't think I'm going to take any of your choices because I disagree with you on everything that you stated.
Do you, though? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, questions about Meg after watching the scene coming on strong in multiple ways, in my opinion.
Uh-huh. Corinne raises her eyebrow.
If this wasn't a Hallmark movie, and this was the quote-unquote real world, would Meg be angling for a business partnership all along from the get-go after she saw herself in Jay Northrup's kitchen and put that little kernel seed in her head? B, a gay bestie to hopefully revamp her style, especially her questionable choices about eyeshadow and slacks. C, a setup with brother Josh, who she keeps asking probing questions about over and over again.
Oh.
Or D, love in spite of being happily married to Henry.
I'm into your options. Oh. I'm surprised. I'm pleasantly surprised. I guess I'd go with B, gay bestie.
What? You didn't pick D, love above all?
Yeah.
This podcast is making you soft in the Hallmark ways, and I am here for it.
What? What? What do you even mean
by that?
Yes,
because usually you're like, love triumphs all, and it's love and love, love, love.
Yeah, but she thinks that he's gay and married, so that poses a problem.
Fair. Fair, fair, fair. Especially to help her with her questionable choices about eyeshadow and slacks.
But I would also disagree with that, because he has not given her a single piece of fashion advice, because he's not actually Julian, he's Josh. And so...
That's me speaking.
If it were actually Julian who was like giving her the time of day, which he wouldn't, but let's pretend that he would. He'd be like, "Oh, just close your eyes a minute there. I just see a little something above your eyes that just needs to just a second." And he would grab a little paper towel and
a lot of paper towel.
He'd be shading the eyeshadow into place so that I'd be like, okay, no, I got it. I'm sorry it took me so long. It just like there was this little speck that just kept on moving around.
All over the top half of your face. Thank you for indulging me.
You know, on her Insta, there was a person who was like, oh my God, I love your eyeshadow in this so much. And Meg was like, here's the name of the makeup artist who did my eyeshadow.
Are you serious?
Yeah, she gave her a shout. The only reason why she's asking about Josh is because of the script. Because they're trying to create some kind of emotional intimacy between her and Josh. And it's just a really bad thing. Your point on her asking about Josh all the time is totally correct. It's weird and it's off.
That's why I'm saying if it was in the real world and all these things were happening, you'd be like, what the fuck on so many levels?
I'd be like, why are you always asking about my brother?
You secretly want me to set you up with them, don't you? Home, heartbeat, job, teeth.
Harvey plus ambition equals lover. Yeah, it all works out. Perfect.
They're perfect for each other. One thing that they don't ever ask is if he's gay. If Josh is gay. The next day, Meg and her eyeshadow go to Julian's hotel room to talk about last night. He opens the door and she explains herself. Julian looks very concerned and says, exactly what happened last night now? And Meg says, I know I got really excited about working together. I mean, I shouldn't have jumped in your lap when you said that, figuratively speaking. But I do have a job here and I don't want you to think I'm taking advantage of my position to leverage opportunities. And Julian clenches his butt cheek a little and tells her, anything I said last night was for sure said prematurely at best. And Meg looks kind of dejected, disappointed, kicked in the face, but maintains her composure, which probably would negate everything I just said, and asks, so should we take 2 months? Julian looks at her confused and she says, are we cool? And he says, oh, yes, and then closes the door hard after.
Now we're back down at the outdoor kitchen stadium. It's the same day at the windiest place on earth. Meg approaches Joshian and Henry and she looks at Joshian and says, how'd you get down here so fast? I was literally just upstairs talking to you. You're in a completely different outfit now and everything. Henry gets this oh shit look on his face and says, hey, Julian, come on over here. We need you to get ready. Joshian is like, oh, sorry, gotta go. He goes over to the counter and he swipes his bracelet against the sensor. He swipes it again. It isn't working. He says, oh, the sensor isn't working. Meg sexily wraps her hand around his wrist and tries it for herself. No dice. Where's the power? Joshian opens the fridge. Oh, no. Everything in there is spoiled. And I'm like, if the fucking sensor doesn't keep the door from being locked, what's the point?
The bracelet has been thwarted.
The bracelet is pretty useless. I'm not exactly sure what its purpose is.
Integral to the plot, not to the actual functionality.
The only
movie.
Thing that I can figure that it does is it turns on the electric stovetop. That's the only thing I could think it would do. And if it were an actual cooking competition, they wouldn't have an electric stovetop. They would have gas stovetops. Those chefs would be having conniptions. But when he opens the refrigerator and Henry, Joshian, and Meg all go, oh no, there is a stench. It looks like there is a small roast, a container of Greek yogurt, along with random greens and berries, including cranberries. And they're supposed to be making prime rib in a red wine sauce. So it's like what they have in their refrigerator makes absolutely no sense for what their meal is supposed to be.
You don't know their process.
See, what they do is they take the cranberries and then they magically turn it into another food item entirely. I like this. Good process.
It's called making cranberries into wine. Oh,
cranberry wine. Why do we not have cranberry wine?
Because it sounds terrible.
Tam, it's all on your shoulders.
No.
The absolute uselessness of the bracelet is fully illustrated in that moment. Mm-hmm. Meg says, I don't understand. How can this happen? Meg, Henry, and Joshian look over at a smirking Etienne. Henry wants to kick some ass. Joshian holds him back and is like, no, 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 we can make this work. Meg is determined to fix the situation as best she can. She's like, come on, we're going back to the hotel kitchen and we're getting you some food. They're in the kitchen. Joshian is a little beside himself. Meg takes a moment and says, breathe. You love to experiment, try new dishes. You should be in your element now. Don't tell me I'm in my element when all my food has been spoiled and your fucking bracelet is for nothing. He doesn't say that. But that's what I'd be saying inside my head.
He should.
He should. She pulls out pressed juices and she's like, you can make these into all kinds of syrups. He's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And she pulls out pancetta and she's like, hey, this is fancy bacon, right? Then Joshian spies in the back of the refrigerator. Wait a second. Is that Wagyu tenderloin? Bing! A light bulb goes off over his head. He's like, you've got cheese here, right? And she's like, so many cheeses. We have all the cheeses. And he says, perfect.
The one thing I had to say about this scene that was completely out of character.
You wanted more pressed juices? You were like, can I have this pressed juice and that pressed juice?
You know my heart. You know my heart so well. No. When Meg pulls out the pancetta and she like holds it up and it's raw and packaged in plastic. And she's like, is it weird that I could just eat this thing right now through the saran wrap? And I'm like, seriously, Meg? A, you want to chew on raw pancetta or bacon, whatever it is. And B, you said food is fuel. And so apparently you don't know how that works. As if it's just there to fuel your body. The last thing you want to do is bite into raw bacon. That's all I'm thinking about that.
And she was like, is it wrong that I want to just eat this right now? I was like, yeah. Yeah, actually, it's very wrong. One, you don't want to be eating raw pork products.
Maybe that's why she wasn't so forthcoming about the food that she liked, because she knows it would be disgusting. I like raw pork eaten straight from the plastic.
Is she a vampire? Maybe that's her problem.
Yes, I thought the same thing.
Cue next scene. The finalists are presenting the food. Suddenly, they're all done with the cooking magically, and the finalists are presenting their food. Etienne presents something that is hard to understand, and then it is now Joshian's turn. He brings forth what looks like four burgers. Heike is like, what the fuck? This is a fancy food competition. What are you doing with that food there? And he says, with the right ingredients, you can elevate the simplest of meals. Patty of ground Wagyu beef with truffles, four different kinds of cheeses, pancetta cooked with a black pepper truffle sauce, french fries in a garlic and truffle oil. This is the Black Diamond Bacon Cheeseburger.
I'm so hungry now.
Everybody looks at the burgers in awe. The judges hold it up to their mouths, but they do not take a bite. And we cut to the semifinal results.
I thought finally we're going to see the judges eat. Finally.
Nope.
But no.
Who makes it through to the finals? All the white people. Yay!
Yay, white people!
The German lady, Etienne, and Joshian all make it through.
In all fairness, Etienne's chef accompanying him looks like she might be Filipino. Well, so there's a little color in the mix.
Just a little. Just a little bit. Little bit. They got rid of the Filipino chef. Why they didn't feature him, I do not know, but whatever.
I love me some Diniguan and chicken adobo and sisig and all Filipino food so good. Would have loved to see it making an appearance here.
His food was probably too interesting for them. They were like, what is this flavor? No. Meg approaches Joshian and she's congratulating him on making it through to the finals. And who approaches? But surprise, it's Meg's dad. He's decided to pop on over to see how she's doing. He needed a break from the castle paperwork. Ugh, that castle paperwork can be so tedious. He says he's happy to see her and he's going to go and check into the hotel. After he leaves, Joshian says to Meg, I can see that that little girl in pigtails is happy, referring to a previous conversation that they had where she always feels like a little girl in pigtails, hoping for the approval of her father. She's like, my dad is here. He came to see me. I'm so excited. Joshian wants to talk to Meg more, but what does he see out of the corner of his eye? Julius waving from behind a bush. to Joshian. And he's like, what the fuck is he doing out here? He should not be at this reception, dinking around behind a bush. So he says, oh, Meg, well, you know what? I'll catch up with you later. Joshian rushes towards Juliash. Well, Julian wants to cook instead of Josh. Surprise, surprise.
Dick.
Josh says, what are you doing here? And Julian says, oh, you know, I should probably take over the final round. You know, just all casual like. I'm like, you're fucking jealous because he's doing well. Get over yourself. Josh says, you don't have the wristband. And he holds up his arm with the glorious wristband on it.
The super effective wristband.
We're not exactly sure what it does, but hey, it looks cute. And Julian says, just tell your girlfriend you lost it or set it on fire or something. Josh is like, Meg is not my girlfriend. Julian says, you offered her my space? Josh is like, do-do-do-do-do-do. I walked that back as soon as it came out of my mouth. I am sorry about that. I don't know what your deal is, but I can win this thing. Josh relents and says, okay, fine. You're going to have to remember, it's going to say Julian and not Josh. And as they're having the end of this conversation, who pops up from behind a nearby bush but Etienne. Dun, dun, dun. He's heard the pivotal parts of the conversation and he realizes that there has been a switcheroo afoot. And it has not been Julian who has been cooking this entire time, but it has been Josh, the diner cook, instead. How dare he? So what's going to happen? Is Etienne going to be like, huh, what a strange turn of events? Will he talk to Julian or Josh about it and see what's going on, if there's any reason? Will he just be like, oh, okay, that's weird, but whatever, I'm just going to focus on me and doing the best that I can do? Or will he go for a different approach?
My vote says a different approach.
Do tell.
Two things. I can't believe that nobody notices a large Frenchman behind a bush. It's not like he was trying to hide very well when they were having that very, very private conversation with all their, like, sneaking aroundedness. And secondly, I think you need to have a conversation about that whole Joshian thing. Like, he says, my name's going to be on the trophy. If Corinne was there, she could find a happy medium by merging the names together. Joshian could be on that trophy.
They're not supposed to know that he's Joshian, though.
He could just say, like, Julian, it's spelled a certain way. It's J-O-S-H. The S-H is silent. The next day, Etienne sees Meg with a decent hairdo, I am happy to report, in the hotel lobby. She sees him first and tries to nope the fuck out of there, but he blocks her way and says, have you noticed anything off about Julian? Perhaps you have because you are already so close. And Meg's like, I promise you, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, Etienne says, I have important information to share. Julian, dun dun dun, is not who he says he is. Meg looks confused. The integrity of the contest is compromised. And Meg stops him right there and says, I don't know what you're talking about, but if you want to talk about integrity, fool, I think you had something to do with the power outage at Julian Station. Don't be trying to cut out your competition just because he's competition. Mm-hmm. Etienne protests, but she walks away flipping her good hair behind her. Team Northrop are back at Chester's by the Sea prepping for the final round. Josh presents his final dish, the peach
Melba.
I wanted to say Melbourne and I forgot how to pronounce it. So my mind blocked into it. It's like, not Melba, not Melba. He presents his peach to his brother, Henry and Chester. They study it intently and Julian says, good, now do it again. And Josh is like, why? It's peaches, ice cream, and raspberry sauce, not rocket science. But Julian's like, it's traditional and it needs to be perfect. Josh continues to protest. Everybody's going to be going off the hook with their interpretations, and we're playing it so safe and boring.
It's peaches and cream. Jesus Christ.
So boring. Julian says, you know, you want to talk about tradition. You were the one that was stuck in Alaska because of this respect for tradition. And Josh is like, oh, yeah, we still never find out what happens to that damn restaurant. Why it's not in their family anymore. Why he's still working there. It's like this big mystery that's hanging over their head.
I totally agree.
But Josh says, oh, yeah, but when I get the restaurant back, which I plan on doing, I'm going to cook whatever I want. Bake Alaska for everyone.
Okay, I'll have
have a burger. Great. So Baked Alaska it is.
What kind of sides do you have? We have Baked Alaska, Baked Alaska, and Baked Alaska.
I think I'd like some french fries. Okay, we'll get you a Baked Alaska. That's great.
Julian argues, you can do whatever the heck you want with your restaurant, whenever that may be, but right now you are in the contest with my name, so you do it my way. Just because you have that little bracelet on doesn't mean you're running things here. Okay?
He's so gracious. That's so, what I really so like about Julian is it's his so gracious, flexible, giving nature.
I was going to say gracious and flexible, 100%. Meg's at the hotel courtyard when she runs into her dad. He has to leave before the final round of the competition. He has papers to sign and meetings to conduct and an asshole father convention to attend, apparently. A.K.A. more important things than Meg.
I want to get on that convention.
She's disappointed and says, this is what I'm doing, Dad. It's my passion. I'm good at it and everybody's proud of me. Even Julian, he says, and his dad's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't put a lot of stock in what that Julian says. His restaurant is going under, honey. That's why I wanted to have lunch there. I can get that building for a song once he closes down. And Meg is super surprised and says, well, he didn't mention that. And by the way, why are you even here? And Mr. Westcott says, I wanted to see what was keeping you from the family business. You are a Westcott and can be doing big and important things. And Meg's like, I told you, Dad, I want to make it on my own. But I can set you up with an office and some capital. And Meg says, on my own, Dad. I only need free rein to use your hotels across the world to give me the upper hand to land the clients that I want. But other than that, alone. And walks away. Josh sees Meg upset again, drawn to her like a tractor beam. Even though everybody tells him to stay away, and in the right world, this would be really creepy that it keeps happening upon her. But he goes to her. This is when the Joshian pop-ups would seem weird and stalkery. I put in my notes just to emphasize my point I already made. He asks her, what's wrong? And she admits that her dad was not here to support her. He's being a bastardo. And she asks, what's wrong with you? Because apparently they're both having a bad day. And Joshian admits he has no idea what he's doing, for the finals are in general. They both have lost their swagger. And Josh says, I had big plans for my kitchen, but it never worked out. And Meg's like, well, then change. Jay Northrup, it's yours. If you don't like it, you can change it. And Josh realizes he was speaking as Josh and not Julian or Joshian, but he meant every word. Meg goes on to give what she would do to change the restaurant, because that's always helpful. If you're having a hard time, let me just go ahead and tell you what I would do instead. She would use warm colors and flowers and candles and make it more romantic. And I don't think that would help. But she's like, I'm sorry, that's just me trying to visually take over your restaurant again. But Joshian's like, no, that's nice. You know, funny thing is, being here and getting all this encouragement makes me feel like I can do anything. And Meg looks at him with her piercing blue eyes and says, I feel exactly the same way. She feels like she can grow her wings and fly, and it's nice to be able to trust and confide in somebody.
That's why I have a best friend. Her name is Tamara, and she's awesome.
And this is not going to end badly, not for me and you, but for the movie. While this is going on, Heike Mueller is making her way to Julian's hotel room. She knocks on the door. He opens it, and the jig is up. She says, Chef Northrup, I presume. And may I see your identification?
Good, Heike.
We're not afraid of bad accents here. Not today. He doesn't have it because it's on Josh, who is downstairs about to come clean to Meg. He tries to confess when Meg's like, oh my God, I forgot to tell you. I have a super funny story about Auntie Yon talking crazy about how you are not who you're supposed to be. And Joshian says he's right, but he says it so quietly and at the same moment as Meg's phone ringing that she does not hear him. It's Heike. She needs to see both of them immediately. So they go. And when Meg gets there, Heike is standing in the outdoor kitchen stadium and says, I see there's a problem with Chef Northrup. And Meg turns around to Joshian and says, no, he's right here. And Heike says, oh, no, he's right here. And she whips around, and there standing behind her is the real Julian. Dun, dun, dun. He looks up at them sheepishly, and Meg gasps. And all of a sudden, everything falls into place, like, immediately for her, which was surprising. She says, you're a twin. You're not Julian. You are pretending to be your brother, and you lied to me. She looks up, and she shakes her fist in the air and says, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. Jail, jail, jail. she quickly falls into cleanup mode and apologizes profusely to Miss Mueller and says, please don't fire me. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. Antion smiles on the side like a cat that's swollen the canary. And Heike says, this could have been catastrophic for the competition, but Antion has agreed to keep quiet. You still work here, but only because there's only 24 hours and we can't do it without you. But you two brothers, Northrop, need to get gone. You are both disqualified and must leave the premises immediately. Meg apologizes, probably cries a little bit, and runs off. Josh calls after her. Julian and Henry look at each other in defeat. And that's the end of the scene. But what the hell? Like, she can't seriously be, like, blamed for that.
I know.
After all of her wristband preparation.
The only thing that Meg is guilty of in regards to that situation is not checking his ID, but...
Even if she did,
it's still, like, fuck all. it's just stupid.
Flabbergasting.
Like, that whole, like, little plot line is just like, what? No. That's ridiculous.
Mm.
Huh? Although we do know that Heike is a petty bitch, so...
Heike is a petty bitch. Everybody knows.
Everybody knows Heike is a petty bitch.
So, a little later, Josh finds Julian packing in his room and says, I'm so sorry I let you down and messed everything up. And Julian says, no, it's not your fault. You were just trying to help. And they finally have that heart-to-heart that they needed to have at the get-go.
Is that where Julian says, you have been so great in doing all this cooking for me and pretending to be me and setting yourself aside so that I can hopefully save my business, just being really selfless throughout this entire thing. I'm sorry for acting like an ass. Is that when he says that?
That is almost verbatim what he does not say. But close. Close. They used to be so close. They used to have so many good memories. And then things changed. And Josh says, you left and you became this Jay Northrop person. And Julian's like, bro, I was a little gay boy in a small town in Alaska. I did not fit in there. I had to leave. And if I ever made you feel bad for staying, I'm sorry. The apology. Finally, the apology.
Just in regards to Julian, making him feel bad for staying. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, just that. Just he put a box around that and said, just for that, though, not everything else. But I missed you. I missed you, too. They both gush. Josh says, for the record, I don't want to be the guy with no ambition anymore. You inviting me here, let me see that there is more for me out there, and I have you to thank for it, which is really very gracious of him. And Julian tries to get up, and he looks like he's in pain, and Josh goes to him, and Julian starts to wave him off, and Josh says, do you need help? And he says, no, and then stops and says, you know what? Yes, I do. And he lets his brother help him in more ways than one. They hug, and then Julian says, okay, we're good. Now you go get that girl. And Josh says, what, girl? You talking about Meg? What? No, she doesn't want to talk to me. And Julian's like, you gotta go try, or you will regret it for the rest of your life.
Yes. Get the girl. Hey!
We're making her own song stylings. That was a Corinne original.
To the tune of Jingle Bells. So, after they share that Yakutat is not the same without each other there, Julian finally encourages Josh to do something that isn't selfish. Josh goes out to talk to Meg. He finds Meg. She's sitting on a bench and he apologizes to her. He's really sorry. He felt like he was in a bind and he couldn't tell her what was going on. She says, you know, you didn't even give me the opportunity to make this choice on my own with what I was going to do. You didn't show me the kind of faith that I showed in you throughout this entire thing. Josh feels worse, but he did have a bigger thing at play trying to save his brother's business. And Meg, who is still just like such a fucking fantastic person, says, even though she doesn't realize her privilege, says, you know, there's a loophole. You can compete. Josh is like, what are you talking about? She takes out the contract and says, Julian's name isn't on the contract. And you signed the name Jay Northrop, which is you. So you can still compete. He's like, whoa. She's like, yeah, I'm doing you a solid, bruh. And he says, forget about competing. I want to compete for your heart. she's like, look, there is no us. I don't even know who you are. And she gets up and she walks off poignantly as Josh looks pained off into the distance.
No.
We meet back in Kitchen Stadium, 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 Stadium.
You can't do an echo check when I'm drinking. That's just wrong.
You were the one who did it the first time. I was just echoing you in your awesomeness.
Oh, almost choked.
Plus, I gave you a shower. Aren't I nice? Two showers.
All right. I'm not that thirsty. I'm going to stop drinking until you finish. Go ahead. Continue.
So they meet at the stadium. Henry, Josh, Julian, Etienne, Heike, Meg are all in Kitchen Stadium, 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 Stadium. Julian's like, hey, we get to compete because guess what? Josh's name is on the contract. Ha ha. Suckers. He does a little victory dance. Heike is disgruntled. And Etienne is like, no. So Etienne is pissed. And he's like, is it fair to let them compete? Julian's like, fair schmear, we will sue you because we have a legal right to compete. So Josh has been cooking throughout this entire thing. He got this far. He should be able to finish this bad boy off. Heike's like, ugh, fine, you will finish it off. Josh says, and the rules also state that if your sous chef drops out of the race, that they can be replaced with somebody else. And Henry goes, cough, cough. Oh, I'm feeling a little ill. I can't possibly go on. Julian says, well, then I guess I'll just have to step in. Everybody does the jumping up in the air, high five together, slow-mo, rainbows, a unicorn goes by, sparkles, glitter everywhere. They are victorious. And then they say, may the best chefs win. I don't know who says that. And Josh uses French and says, c'est la guerre.
Which means?
This is war.
Yeah. Oh, did not know that.
Etienne looks pisseder. First he was pissed, now he's pisseder.
Yes. Yes, he did.
Josh and Julian and Henry go off to plot their final meal. They got to put their stamp on the competition. Fuck that sliver of vanilla ice cream on peaches. Let's do something different. Duh. That was a terrible idea, Julian. Josh was right all along. The brothers compete with the montage. They don't compete actually with a montage, but the montage shows the competition.
Love a good montage.
People are cooking. There's peaches flying everywhere. There's Melba's flying everywhere. It's just a whole thing. They have finished their mystery dessert. It's time to bring it up. And Josh says, may I present the J. Northrup Peach Melba Baked Alaska, or as Tamara would call it, the Peach Melbourne Baked Alaska. That's for you, girl. That's for you. And it's the cutest tiny
thank you.
You're welcome. I love you.
All my mispronunciations. Thank you.
I think that that's an apt name for it because the Peach Melbourne Baked Alaska, because it's the cutest, tiniest baked Alaska about the size of a cupcake, and it should have its own name, gosh darn it.
Hmm. Agreed.
Tiny ones are put in front of the judges who ostensibly eat it. Who knows? Or maybe they just look at it and try and osmosis it into their system. Josh wins and the crowd goes wild. Yay! Baked Alaska! Peach Melbourne! This is amazing! Meg approaches Josh, congratulates him, and Josh says to her, you gave me a reason to want to win. It started off with Julian, but very quickly became about something else. Meg says, I don't know if I can ever forgive you. Josh wants his 2 months. He's calling it in. You may feel like you can't forgive me now, but if you can forgive me within 2 months, we can make this happen.
What a crock of shit.
Agreed. Conveniently, we're a day or two short of 2 months into the future now. We see a New York City street, the outside of the restaurant that Julian owns, but now the sign is different. Instead of saying J. Northrup, it says JJ Northrop. So people can now say they're going to JJ's. Henry, Julian, and Josh are all in the dining room admiring the renovation and how booked the restaurant is. Julian says to Josh, "Still no word, huh?" Josh looks pained and he says, "No." Then, suddenly, who walks into the room but Meg in a long 80s 90 dress with pleats all over it. It's only missing the shoulder pads. But her eye makeup is impeccable and subtle and beautiful. Tamara approves.
No,
it's not. No. Yeah, no. You did not. Oh, my goodness. You need to look at her fucking eye makeup because it is. Oh. I'm not lying.
I know I am. She has a strong eye and a strong lip, and that is a strong no. You have to do one or the other.
No, she doesn't.
You can't have a strong eye and a strong
lip. Her eyes in they're not strong.
Oh, Christ. I probably put that in the wrong spot because I remember there was a strong eye and a strong lip. Cut that. Okay, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wherever the strong eye, strong lip, strong no goes, can you just inject that in your editing wisdom wherever it needs to go? Not here, but, you know, somewhere up in the kitchen countdown competition scene, like three scenes ago.
I think people know how they feel. You feel about her eyeshadow.
I don't think they do.
So she walks in her very 80s / modest dress. She received the invitation and it's been almost 2 months. So Josh sent her an invitation to the reopening of the restaurant. She's like, "I'm surprised you're not up in Alaska." And he responds, "I realized that I didn't have to be in Alaska to continue my family legacy. I could be here in NYC, woot, making my mark with my brother Julian, who can be a pain in the ass, but he's my pain in the ass."
Yes.
She's ostensibly doing event planning, I guess, because she said that's what her heart is, even though she doesn't actually say what she is doing in New York. Josh pulls out a menu and says, hey Meg, check out the menu. And she opens the menu and looks at it and says, this isn't a real menu. And he says, yes, it is. There's a central item that's all in bold with huge letters, and it's got stars, rainbows, and unicorns bordering the entire thing. And it says, "Meg's Black Diamond Truffle Burger." It might not have had all that fanfare around it, perhaps, but we didn't see the menu, so I'm just filling in the blanks here.
A natural assumption that it would have on.
Yes, yes. You as the graphic designer would automatically, like, if you had a featured menu item like that, that's what you would probably do with it, right?
Unicorns and rainbows all day.
Mm-hmm. Unicorn rainbow border. She's completely tickled that there is a burger named after her. I think that would be kind of romantic, having a menu item named after you, depending on what the item was.
My dream has always been to have a sandwich named after me.
Do you know what the sandwich would have in it?
Not yet, no. I have no, just like, if somebody said, "It's your sandwich, what do you want to put on it?" I'd be like, "Give me 2.5 months to think about it."
All I know,
because I would take that shit seriously,
is Tamara's sandwich would be saucy.
Oh, fuck yeah.
It would be saucy, and there'd be a variety of different textures and flavors going on in it, because I know she likes different kinds of crunch and sauce and zing and zang.
And there'd be a side of sauce on top of the sauce on the sandwich.
Meg is flattered that she has a menu item named after her, and she says, "I think I need to meet this new chef, the one who created this menu item." Josh says, "I'll go get him." He takes a few steps away, looks saucily over his shoulder, speaking of sauces, and turns around and says, "Hello, my name is Josh." And she says, "Why, hello, my name is Meg." And he looks into her eyes, drawing her into the kiss tractor beam. And he says, "I know it hasn't been a full 2 months." And she, participating in the kiss tractor beam, says, "Close enough." And they kiss. And when they kiss, it's a full-on makeout sesh. This is one of the most enthusiastic kisses I have seen in a Hallmark movie. They keep on kissing. Henry and Julian come out of the kitchen and they're like, hey guys, we need to open up the restaurant. We're booked for 4 months out, so we need to get a move on. And they're kissing away. They hold up their middle finger while they're kissing towards the noise. And they're like, we've been waiting for this moment. We're kissing some more. And they're like, look, just go to the bathroom. It's really nice and remodeled. I know you want to do something else.
Can I just point out before we exit this beautifully described scene, the outright fire hazards that are on every single small circular table that don't look sturdy at all and have huge 5-candle holding candelabras that take over half the table on every single table. And I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? There's a reason why restaurants, when they have candles on the table, have them in small jars.
Little votives.
Not huge candelabra. Yes. Little votive candles. I have said it many times in our other Hallmark movies that if my family was frequenting that restaurant, there would be little fires everywhere.
Yeah, having giant candelabras on the table and surrounding areas doesn't seem like the smartest idea. I completely agree with you.
Yes.
But you know what it does make for? A good fade out to candles. And that's what they did. They finished the scene by pulling back to candles, soft focus, fade out to fire.
Not a fire hazard at all.
No, totally a fire hazard. You are completely right about that.
I'm on myself in the 80s with all the hairspray I had and my super ooper duper long hair would have caught on fire and died at JJ Northrop.
Yeah, but you would have had a really good meal.
It's true.
So, how many dry kisses do you give this bad boy?
I give this one 4 dry kisses because it is the first Hallmark movie that made me LOL in a couple of spots. I appreciated the physical humor. I appreciated Jeremy Jordan's performance. I liked how he was more fluid with Julian and how he was like more manly with Josh. And I, of course, loved Henry, who was played by who now?
Callum Blue.
Appreciated Henry, played by Callum Blue, and Chester and all of his mystery and intrigue.
Mystique.
So I give it 4 out of 5 dry kisses. Mama.
I give it 3.5 dry kisses because, well, I do think in general this is a solid 4-star Hallmark movie because of the whole, they didn't cast any gay people to play openly gay roles. The amount of, say, affection, like physical affection or anything like that, that was between the gay couple was so low-key. Basically, wouldn't have known they were gay unless they really talked about it. I didn't feel like that was well executed. So yeah, Hallmark, giving you a thumbs up for effort. Glad that you are working towards it. Also, the diversity in this movie, super stinky. Thumbs down on that. Just about everybody was white. It failed on a couple of different fronts for me. The plot was like fine and it was enjoyable. And I love a good switcheroo movie. I love a good twin movie. I am a sucker for those kinds of movies. And so I had a fun time watching it. It's a yay.
Yes. All right. 3.5 dry kisses for Corinne. Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us at One Dry Kiss.
We appreciate you going on this little mixed up journey with
us. This is probably our longest episode ever.
And if you'd like to reach out to us,
you can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com. Also, if you want to see our beautiful social media presence, I am generally unruly and in charge of the Twitters at onedrykiss.
I am generally in charge of the Instagrams and the Facebookses, which is One Dry Kiss, also one spelled out O-N-E.
Dry spelled out D-R-Y.
Well, just say because it could be the number
one. No, it's true. It's I not, know. I thought you were going to say
Kiss, K-I-S-S.
Yeah, there you go.
Kiss with 17 S's, just kidding.
And a few Z's in there.
And a Q, but you get to decide.
It's a silent Q.
Yes.
Please rate and review us on iTunes Podcast or whatever other platform that you are listening to us on. We need those ratings. We need that love.
Love to love you, baby.
And we hope that this week you end up with more than one dry kiss in your life, but you will at least get one from us as we send you off with one dry kiss.
Mwah. Mwah. I know, I was like walking around all morning, I'm all SIM card, because it was still on my computer. SIM card.
When I sat down, I was like, okay, let's see where the SIM card is. Hopefully it's in the, nope, not there.
I dang near held it, like, sounded like I had Tourette's syndrome walking around making my card. SIM card, getting my water, SIM card, getting my iPad.